Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm Brittany Pacheco.
I'm Tristan's best friend.
Tristan Jones.
I'm Marcy Gonzalez.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are here today to discuss episode 6 of X-Men 97, but also welcome back to Tristan, who hasn't been with us in a little while. Tristan, good to see you again.
I appreciate y'all having me, man. Teaching takes up too much of my time and depresses me 1% every day. So I'm back.
Preach.
Glad to have you back. And I want to start out with you, actually, because we've been doing this show week to week, and like I said, we're on episode 6 now. But I kind of want to get your history with the X-Men. Did you grow up watching the OG series? And what are your thoughts on the season as a whole so far?
I kind of start present and working my way back. I was excited about X-Men 97 when I saw, a bunch of the trailers and, a bunch of the promo stuff beforehand, which is odd because I have very little history with the X-Men. I wasn't a comic book reader as a child. I was more of a, SI for kids, right. The SI Sports Illustrated pipeline. So that was kind of my bag as a kid. So I come to just comic books in general late as hell. Like Black Panther was the first, Ta-Nehisi Coates' Black Panther was the first comic book I read. And I was, 29 or something like that. So, but I did, obviously I watched the movies, the Sony movies. I also watched the Days of Future Past, the newer version of the X-Men. So I have a little bit of familiarity with, so I'm coming into this fairly new, and I've been super happy with what they've done with this newer version of X-Men. I love it.
Well, that's good because we've enjoyed it as well. Let's get to episode 6. Episode 6, titled Life, Death, Part 2. Marcy, I'll start with you. What are your thoughts on the episode?
Sorry, there is a huge spider on my desk, and I'm trying to concentrate and just seeing it crawl away.
Oh, God.
It took me a couple seconds to just kind of realize what was happening because I turned the show on and I was kind of sleepy. So I was like, I'll just start episode 6. But I was like, what the fuck are we doing in outer space? Who are these people? I have no clue what's going on. So I had to turn it off and watch it the next day when I was awake. Good episode overall, but again, it did take me a couple seconds or minutes to just kind of acclimate myself to what was going on, who these people were. We see the return of Charles Xavier, so that was really exciting. And then just some space racism, which is, interesting, I guess. And, I guess you can't ever escape racism, whether it's in the Milky Way ghetto Earth or, other space. Other places.
Yeah, well said. Brittany, what are your thoughts on episode 6?
I gotta say, this show has been five for five, prior to this episode, because I just wasn't really digging this episode in particular. What kind of bothers me is the jumping around of storylines. Like, I know we have a lot of characters to cover. I know we have a lot of different stories to cover. It's just kind of like this particular episode following the fantastic mid-season finale, as we, kind of call it here. I was just let down a little bit because it's like, you end with that last week and then you come back to this, Storm story, which I love Storm, don't get me wrong. No disrespect. The Charles Xavier thing, which is also cool in the sense of we get to see him again. We kind of already knew that was going to happen at some point. Mm-hmm. But the placement of this episode after what happened on Genosha, Gambit and company, it's just like, I don't know. I was just really let down with it because it's a little jarring, a little bit of a whiplash. And I felt like I was maybe missing something. And I was telling Frank this off screen the other day that I know that all these stories obviously are going to bridge together. We're gearing towards what will be a three-parter finale, spoiler, but for me with this episode, I wasn't entirely digging it. There are moments that I think are highlights, But overall, for me, it's the lowest for the season thus far.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I'm kind of in the same boat. But Frank, I want to get your thoughts on it first.
I fucking loved it. I thought the placement was perfect. Because when the last episode ends, with all the mutants, the majority of the mutants dying in Genosha, including a major fan favorite in Gambit, to transition to what's going on with Charles, the world thinks Charles is dead. So to go from that to like this episode where Charles is, you know, he's pretty much back to his old self again. The Shi'ar Empire has restored his, you know, his consciousness to his body. They've been able to bring him back to life pretty much. And it's the whole, like, I'm the proud father who's left and my kids have grown up. But while I'm thinking my kids are good, this mayhem going on back home that I don't know about. So from that standpoint, I thought the placement was perfect because, like, the timing of it, too, makes sense because Leandra loves him. She's trying to indoctrinate him into this society, not just any society, arguably the most powerful society in outer space known in 616 or known in this particular universe. And him being, you know, given the him being challenged with the choice of my love or my family, and given the that's gone on Earth right now, he has no idea. I thought the placement and the transition of what's going on with Charles and what he's fighting with made sense, especially how it ended too. So I loved it. And then the Easter eggs for me as a comic book nerd, they low key just told one of the most powerful mutants in all the universe, and he didn't even say a word in the episode. The Easter eggs for me was just uncanny. So
yeah, uncanny. Good call with that for talking about the X-Men. But yeah, I think it's because you're a bigger fan of the X-Men than all of us probably combined. So you have a better understanding of the characters and just the storylines from the comics and everything. So I get why you're higher on this episode than probably the rest of us are. Tristan, what was your take on this episode?
Like Marcy, I also watched this in I would say I was sleepy, but then I was in an elevated state of mind. So I had to come back. I think I fell asleep. My wife will tell you, I fell asleep probably like halfway through it and picked it up the next day and rewatched. I get why, Brittany, I get like kind of your misgivings about this episode and the placement. I thought I didn't have an issue with the placement. I think we kind of need that kind of come down from episode 5 because so much stuff happened. And, you know, sometimes I think it's best that shows don't say, okay, we went all the way up to 10 in this episode. Let's keep it at 9. Like, I think sometimes it's best to kind of ground it at a 5 or a 6. And I think that's what episode 6 did. Was it my favorite episode? Like, no, but like the bar has been so high this season over the first 5 episodes. I did kind of love like the Charles, because I remember, you know, looking at the first 5 episodes and I'm talking about, you know, Charles Xavier being dead and so on and so forth, which confuses the hell out of me, knowing like not a thing about the story. I'm like, what? Charles, like like telling me fucking Jokic died or something. Like, what the what? This whole thing's about him. But I love the episode. I love the dialogue between Charles and his forgive me names, like his, you know, bride to be, so on and so forth. And like Marcy said, like the overt racism, you know, happening between, you know, one species to the next, show me, like, sometimes I have to remember, like, these are new writers who are like bringing this, you know, this storyline into like the 21st century. And, you know, all of the sensibilities that, you know, exist between the shows that we love now, they're incorporating into the X-Men, even in the animated show. Like, it's really heavy on the social issues and, you know, the social debates and conflicts. But I very much like this episode. I didn't feel like it took away from the momentum of the first 5. If anything, I think it's a necessary thing, because I'm just like, part of the reason I'm watching this shit is for like Charles Xavier. Like, he's just one of the figures that I recognize with X-Men. So for him to not be there in the first five episodes and me to have like zero backstory on why he wasn't there outside of like the discourse and dialogue that's in, you know, kind of interspersed in the first five, I thought it was an excellent episode.
Yeah. And to kind of speak about Charles Xavier and his whereabouts. So the OG series ends and he doesn't technically die. And Frank, you might be able to help me explain this better than help explain better than I can, but basically like his body on Earth is kind of dead, but his soul goes to space with Lalandra, Leandra, how do you say it?
Yeah.
Leandra. Like, Leandra. Right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah. 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 The Friends of Humanity developed this device to where it can eradicate mutants and their powers and all that. And when he got shot, it pretty much left him as a vegetable. And there was nothing on planet Earth that could, they didn't have the technology on planet Earth to like try to revive him. So in this finale, he's believed to be dead, to be in this permanent, like in between stasis. So Leandra and the Shi'ar Empire comes in the series finale, what we thought was the series finale, and they take his body to out of space, to their space dwelling. And so this has been a span, like maybe a better part of a year now that he's been gone. The world thinks he's dead. The X-Men pretty much think he's dead, because at that point there wasn't much odds for him to come back out of this. So so he's believed to be dead, as far as Earth is concerned.
Yeah, they do kind of leave it. It's kind of vague though, where it's like they say that he's dead, but then some of them know, well, you know, he's not really technically dead. He's in space, and maybe we'll see him again, but maybe not. It's kind of been a weird part of the show so far, because you know, like you said, the way the OG series ends, it's, you know, he's not dead. You know, they kind of make that clear that they may not see him again, but he's not dead. But as far as my take on the episode, like there are some real high points in this episode. Obviously, you know, Professor Xavier coming back is a key point. Storm getting her powers back, that's awesome, obviously. I didn't like the fact that she got her powers back and it wasn't very eventful in my mind. It's like, I still don't really understand how she got her powers back. It's like I guess she overcame her fear and then that's how she got her powers back, which is fine, but she's such a powerful character. And obviously when we see her lose her powers early in the season, it's such a big moment. And I felt like it was going to be like a season long arc to see her get her powers back. And same way I thought Professor X would probably come back in the finale instead of like, you know, middle of the season. But my main issue with this episode is, and I mentioned this with the original series, I'm just not a big fan of the X-Men in space. I just think it just doesn't work for me. Like not that the X-Men are grounded characters per se, like Batman or something, but like, I do like when they're using their powers on Earth, you know, like it just makes more sense when they're, you know, facing, you know, different villains or adversity in this world. So, not a big space guy for the X-Men, but,
I don't think you're a big space guy much these days, like space anything.
I liked Guardians 3 a lot. That was in space.
Well, that's maybe like the exception. Star Wars, no.
I'm pretty out on Star Wars, so yeah.
Yeah.
But, on this pod of like, I'm right with you. I'm not a big fan outside of Guardians. That's really as far as it goes for me. I'm not a big fan of the space thing.
Yeah.
So you did not like the Marvels. That's a.
I stopped watching it probably about 45 minutes through, and I've never picked it up. So.
Good to know.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about Storm and Professor X. We're gonna talk more about that in a little bit, but let's talk about one of the other key moments in this episode. You know, we're coming off episode 5, which was this, like, honestly could have been a season finale, easily could have been a series finale, but instead it's like episode 5 in the middle of the season. And we're wondering, like, okay, who is behind this attack on Genosha? And then we find out at the end of the episode, it's Mr. Sinister, the Baker himself. Marcy, what did you think about that reveal, having Sinister be the one who is now trying to spur on a mutant-human war?
It was great to see that reveal, because part of me thought maybe it was some kind of inside job to where just like the humans wanted to seem nice and be like, yes, we're letting you into the UN, but then we're going to like attack you or something to provoke you. Mm-hmm. So it was nice that it was a sinister plan and not just kind of like humans sucking like they always do. So that was just kind of fun. Do you think we'll see the Goblin Queen again? Like, she was, is that her name? I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm still trying to think about the freaking
Madeline Pryor.
Put somewhere in my on my desk. So that was cool. And Frank kind of also told us to expect to see Mr. Sinister again. So kudos to you, Black Magic. I told you, like, I'm all right with you. I'll trust whatever you say.
And that's Magic with a K, as we talked about last week. That's his mutant name. Hey Frank, I want to go to you real quick because do you like the fact that it's Sinister who's behind this? Because there was a lot of speculation online that the potential villain in Deadpool and Wolverine, which we'll talk about the trailer here in a little while, that character was possibly going to be the villain in this show. But of course, that would have been like 5 years before that character was even created in the comics. So maybe that's the reason why that character is not. But what do you think about Mr. Sinister being potentially the big bad of season one?
I think he's a bad. I don't think he's a big bad. I think he's a pawn as well. I think he's a pawn of another larger character that I mentioned in episode 4. And he's previewed in the introductions a couple of times. And I think that guy's going to be the big bad. The Thanos of this series, per se.
Apocalypse, right?
Yeah, I think it's Apocalypse. There's just too many clues, like Bishop going back into the future. You know, Cyclops and Madeline Pryor's son getting that virus and going into the future as well, and Cable coming back. And one of Cable's biggest adversaries is Apocalypse. The destruction of Genosha. You know, that's an apocalyptic event, you know, and Apocalypse is he's like Thanos. So Thanos is, they're very similar, but very different. Thanos is all about population control. Apocalypse's mantra is survival of the fittest. And when I watched Genosha in that last episode and the destruction of Genosha, what I saw was eradication of the weak. And I'm talking about from the antagonist's eyes, and whoever survives will be the pawns who will lead this next generation to glory. And I think Apocalypse is the head guy, and I think Sinister is working with him. So I think he'll probably get unveiled in the season finale.
Yeah, I could see that. I didn't know there was a connection between Sinister and Apocalypse. Really, it seemed like they were kind of separate.
In the Age of Apocalypse storyline, Sinister is Apocalypse's lead scientist. In that storyline. Now that's an offshoot storyline from the 616, but it's still a storyline. So I can see the writers going that route and like infusing Sinister as assistant to Apocalypse. Mm-hmm.
So with Sinister, we know from earlier in the season that he created Madeline Pryor. He baked her, as he said, which is so gross. Brittany, I want to throw it to you now. It looks like Madeline Pryor died in episode 5. So my question to you, do you think we're going to have more clones?
That's a great question. Yeah, she definitely was vaporized in the previous episode, and that was confirmed by the writer of that episode, Bo DiMaio, because he was on Twitter when that episode aired. And so he's like saying, yeah, you know, Madeline was vaporized. So, and you know, it's kind of interesting to have it confirmed that it was Sinister who was behind the attacks, because there's a lot of kind of tells when you look back on it. And the main one being green, the color green. Green is, you know, from the first time that we saw Sinister and what have you, it to me at least, and maybe because I deal with color all freaking day long, is very much associated with him. You know, when we look back at the third episode when he took Nathan to his lair and he put him in that container and it was full of green, you know, stuff and what have you, and the green virus is taking over Nathan. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of just the color of green association. So like, yeah, looking back, hindsight, it's like, oh, duh, should have associated that. However,
explosion in Genosha.
The explosion itself. Yes, yeah, exactly. Right. So very, very well thought, just not good of me to not have picked up on that. But anyway, I don't know if we'll see more clones. Are you asking specifically that of Jean Grey / Madeline Pryor, or maybe some other people? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I wonder, because like that's like his thing. He's trying to create the perfect mutant. And,
right.
And maybe he has with Nathan Summers, but
I don't
kids in the future with Bishop. So
right. And for that, I definitely think that, kind of going back on what Frank had said in previous episodes, there's a reason that we're seeing certain characters, certain clips in the intros and seeing their cameos in episodes. It's not because, you know, they're trying to cram so much into such a short amount of time. They're going to serve a purpose. So we're going to see, for sure, I'm almost 100%. We're going to see Cable again. To what capacity? Don't know. But I'm not entirely sure that we'll get to see like more clones. It would be kind of interesting of how that would be spun to make it make sense, you know, because we did see Madeline Pryor evaporate before us.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the opening credits and the character lineup, did y'all notice that Magneto was missing? Magneto and Gambit were missing. Of course, we know that Gambit is dead. Magneto presumed to be dead, or as Frank said, neutralized. Nightcrawler was added to the lineup. Tristan, I want to get your thoughts on Magneto. What do you think he's gone? And what did you think about the character through the first five episodes?
So again, my reference point with Magneto comes from like the movies, where he's certainly a nuanced character, right? And all the different portrayals of Magneto, Eric, forgetting the last name, just for a pause. People, y'all expect me to remember every fucking like Targaryen known to me.
Yes. We do.
I also need to know like the fucking Detroit Pistons starting lineup in 1986. Like I'm 38. Like my brain is not equipped to handle all this storage. But Eric Magneto, I will say I've been surprised by I don't even know if this is the right word, but like the altruism of his character. Like, obviously he feels some level of, he owes something to Charles. Like they were legitimate friends, you know, who had fallen out. So he, in his own way, feels like he is taking care of what Charles wanted him to do, which is take care of the X-Men. Right. And I wouldn't trust him. You know, I think there's sufficient reason not to trust Magneto, but he has demonstrated through words and actions that he's willing to put himself above, you know, his prior philosophies on the X-Men, you know, mutant-human conflict or just their coexistence on this planet. So honestly, Magneto's been one of my favorite characters. Like, I'm all for complex characters. I'm all for anti-heroes. I'm all for, you know, people who I can't really fully tell their intentions. And that means like you're doing your job well. Like, I know this is an animated series. We're not talking about how well it's been acted, but like there's sufficient reason to believe that Magneto is playing them and he's ultimately going to turn on them in the end or turn back to being this, you know, tyrant of a mutant that he's been in these different betrayals. There's also reason to believe that, hey, like he legitimately has love. That's one thing I've gotten from the movies. He legitimately has love for mutants, like for the mutant race. And he wants to see the mutant race progress and live and be free and safe. And sometimes that comes in conflict with, you know, humans and our bullshit. But I've been very happy with the character. Do I think he's dead? Man, I don't fucking know, man. Like this is so interesting because for all the shows that we've, you know, reviewed on this podcast, on the show, I at least have some backstory, right? Like that I can kind of come back to. I have nothing. Like I have, and it's so freeing to kind of to watch it from that sense. Like I have no idea. Do I think he's dead? I'm gonna say no, because I just think that his character is too important to the overall story. But shit, I thought Gambit was important to the story, and RIP. You know, so I'm gonna say 70-30 that he's alive. And that, like Frank said, he's just kind of neutralized, but I could look like Boo Boo the Fool on next Wednesday. So we'll see.
Not Boo Boo. You know, interesting thought as Tristan spoke, and I'm really happy that you are back talking with us, because you've always got very insightful things to say, and I appreciate it. To going back to your question, Justin, about clones, what if Magneto was neutralized and captured, and that's the clone that we're going to see from Sinister? Bum, bum, bum.
Very interesting.
I don't know. If they go that direction. I don't know why. I think Marcy wouldn't be opposed to seeing more Magneto with that flowy, flowy hair.
Is Mac Daddy Magneto. Rogue would also not be averse to seeing Magneto again. No.
Oof.
Bring him back.
Bring back Gambit, damn it. Bring back my Cajun boy.
We need the crop tops and the beignets.
How will I survive when you've gone so far away?
Good impression.
I did that for you, Justin.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. Yeah. No, Magneto's not dead. I mean, I don't know when he'll come back, but he's not dead. I always say the finale. That's just kind of my go-to. So I feel like he'll be in the final three episodes of the season. But, you know, and Frank, I want to get your thoughts on this, because one of the theories I've read online is that, you know, before Magneto was neutralized, Leech is in front of him. And Leech, his name is Leech because he can leech powers off the, you know, person he's around. There's some thought that maybe Leech absorbed Magneto's powers, and that, I guess, helped save him in the situation. Like, that's why he was neutralized, because his Omega threat powers were no longer detectable.
I mean, it's quite a possibility, but I mean, I would think if it wasn't detectable from Magneto, wouldn't it have been detectable from Leech? Because the power doesn't just go away; it's just rechanneled to another person's body. It's a possibility. I think another clue for me that I know Magneto's not dead is that at the end of the episode, when Charles has that psychic vision, he sees the X-Men perishing. Magneto's not in that vision. He didn't perish. So that was for me. I mean, I was about 90% sure when I saw that vision and he wasn't in it. I was 100% sure. I'm like, he ain't dead. And plus, he's Magneto. He's too powerful of a character and too pivotal of a character to just X out of the game like that. So, and I mean, even with Gambit's dead, but like, again, Cable showed up. Like, Cable showed up in that episode. This is the future, Bishop and Cable are two like pivotal characters that jump from timeline to timeline over and over again, and I feel like Cable is going to play a major part into reversing what happened, and Gambit will be back. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, we got to see him a little bit in this episode. I don't think any of us were maybe expecting that. Marcy,
shocked the hell out of me. Sorry.
What'd you think of the vision of the zombie giant Gambit?
At first I was like excited, because I was like, wait, if they were able to bring Charles back, does that mean they somehow were able to bring Gambit back? And then like it's his weird zombie skeleton creature thing. I was like, oh no. And then we see Charles just being like, my children, like they were drinking wine and dancing and making love, and then he falls. Like A+ on like that drama, because you could really feel that he was very distraught by what he was seeing, and distraught enough to be like, no, I've got to go back home to my children, and like, I don't care about you, woman, like my children need me back home. So it was sad to see Gambit just kind of reiterate that Gambit, for the time being at least, is dead, and that Charles now has to live with the realization that his children on Earth weren't just kind of like thriving under Magneto's care. Like, things have gone sideways.
Yeah, I think the Gambit thing worked really well, because for those of us who wanted like an immediate follow-up from what happened in episode 5, and I kind of wish that they would have like done, like, you know, they've done a couple episodes now where it's like this episode was half Charles' story, half Storm's story, right? And a few episodes ago, we had, it was half Jubilee, half Storm. Like this time I could have, you know, maybe had split it three ways. Like, let's get the aftermath of like what's going on with the team back in New York or wherever they're located. Let's, you know, get Charles's thing. Let's obviously find out more about Storm. I could have used like just a little bit of an update of like what's going on with Beast and Cyclops and the crew after what we saw. We're going to get that. Obviously that's probably going to be the next episode. I would think, going forward. I did mention earlier that I'm not a big fan of the space stuff. I was a big fan, however, of seeing Ronan the Accuser in this episode, because obviously to me that I learned about him in Guardians of the Galaxy, and the fact they used the term Terran, which I thought was great. Tristan, you're a Guardians fan. What'd you think about those kind of, I mean, they weren't nods to Guardians per se, but for people who, you know, didn't grow up with the X-Men, like that's, you know, that's my touchstone to those terms, or, you know, the Guardians.
It, for me, like I was just happy that there was a name that I recognized, like outside of like the main, you know, principals, Wolverine, Cyclops. Like I'm not fucking I haven't lived under a rock. Like I know who those people are, but like, it's like, hey, Ronan, whoa, I know that name. So like, you just kind of perk up, like the Leo DiCaprio meme, like, hey, I know that guy. No, it's fun. Like I'm enjoying just learning more. Like I'm gonna rewatch the OG series this weekend, and so I can like get more context, because I feel fucking ignorant like talking about this shit. But it's fun, like, because I'm just learning more, one, through this conversation, and just like some of the reviews that I've read, learning some of those backstories and things. Yeah. Like I don't know, like I'm so ignorant about which characters cross over. You know, like I don't know shit about shit. So like, this is like legitimately fun for me.
Well, so I did rewatch the entire, I mean, for me, mostly was watching for the first time. I watched the OG series a couple months ago in preparation for this show, and it's 76 episodes. So, you know, buckle up if you're going to do all of them, but there's some really cool stuff in it. And the one thing I do like about this series and about this universe is that it's not a part of the MCU yet. Now it might be, there might be a crossover via the multiverse, but it's its own thing. There's, you know, this X-Men, they have their own Captain America. They have, you know, like Hulk and Thor and Doctor Strange. These people make very small cameos. I think we're going to see Spider-Man from 1998, the other Fox show. I think we will see that character come up, but there, it's cool that it's not the MCU per se. It's this other kind of universe unto itself. And we can kind of, we see characters we know, like, for example, in episode, Watcher was there. The Watcher was in the sky. If you notice very briefly, obviously the Watcher is a big part of What If, and that was, might be, go ahead.
Was he also not in the beginning of this episode too, or was I hallucinating?
Oh, if he was, I'd missed it.
So I say like right in the beginning of the episode, because when we first see that battle happening out in space, you know, against the Kree and the, how do you pronounce the other people, Frank, the
Shi'ar Empire.
Okay. Yeah. Shi'ar. Yeah. I want to say, unless I was just hallucinating and not on the good stuff hallucinating, I could have sworn that I saw the silhouette of the Watcher once again, watching the things that are happening out in space. And I have, so I say this openly without having been on Twitter or anything, because I was so late in watching this episode. I know I was ruining Frank's day one day by not having watched the episode. Sorry. But but I don't know. I feel like we're getting that nod. And then we kind of got some Doctor Strange sort of magic shit going on in this episode as well, in my opinion, with like Forge. And it wasn't, you know, the Doctor Strange magic directly, but the illustration of it was very similar to that of what we've seen with Doctor Strange. So what, like Justin was saying, it's not directly connected to the MCU yet, but we're getting like little nods and little things like that here and there sprinkled in.
Yeah. You know, one character that I don't think is in the MCU, or maybe ever will be, or I wouldn't say ever, but is Deathbird. That's Lalandra's evil sister. Marcy, what did you think about the sassy sister who wants to take over the throne?
Bitch is racist. Like,
there's that too. Yeah, elaborate. Go ahead, go for it.
I mean, maybe like her hatred of humans is justified. I really don't know a lot about her backstory, but I mean, she refers to Earth as like, you know, your Milky Way ghetto when Charles, you know, is talking about just kind of marrying her sister. She's like, no, you're not going to talk us into like making your Milky Way ghetto like our home or whatever. And then she's just kind of talking about how on Earth, obviously, there are humans that are descended from simians. So she's like, Charles, like, get your freak fluids away from me. And I was like, what? However, she's an interesting villain, I guess, to watch. Apart from like the crazy ass racism, she could go like toe to toe with Charles, just kind of like by the way that they were trading barbs. And so she's interesting to watch for now. But bitch is racist. Like, what is her deal? Frank, I'll ask you, is her hatred of humans justified or is she just a bitch?
It's not just her, it's the Shi'ar people in general. They look at humans as beneath them. They're like ants to them. So there's a lack of respect of existence to them. When they say Terran is actually a very negative term. It means human, but it's pretty much like it's
derogatory. Kind of subhuman.
Yeah, it's derogatory in a way. So her hatred towards humans is equal to her hatred towards anybody who she fears or any species of people she feels as there are less to them. The Shi'ar ways, they're tyrannical people. They live to conquer. And for them is that if you're less than or you're not equal to, they don't respect you and they just don't fuck with you like that. So that's where more of her hatred is from. It's just effect from a standpoint of like, you're less than us, so.
Okay, get it. So just regular old racist, like we know humans.
It's alive and well.
It's alive and well in the whole galaxy, apparently. But I mean, they're weird, like bird-like creatures, but also their heads look like weird fish heads, but also like toilet bowl brushes. So I don't really know where like her high and mightiness comes from. Just come on, like no bitch. If you looked in a mirror.
Not to mention, I mean, granted that Charles and company are mutants, but like, how are they so not so different from mutants? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we're just going to pick and choose what's acceptable, what's the right kind of mutant and what isn't. Like, I
think that just goes back to humans, like the humans that are racist and think that they're better than others. It's like, what makes you different from all the other humans that you hate? You're still human, so yeah, exactly. I'm guessing that's where they're trying to go with that, but it's like, okay.
If y'all will allow me to get a tad bit philosophical. I don't know shit about the X-Men, but I do know racism. the thing that makes, I think, from each perspective, from the mutant perspective, human perspective, the Shi'ar perspective, the Kree perspective, what makes them different is their differentness. You know, it's the thing. That's the thing that makes you unique. Like if you can fly, but I can be invisible, I can convince myself that my ability to be invisible is much more valuable and makes me much more superior than your ability to fly. Is there logic to it? No, but there's no logic in racism, right? Like it's a completely illogical philosophy, you know, mental illness, I would argue, but a philosophy that, you know, causes harm and causes conflict and division amongst any type of being, right? So from the mutant perspective, right, they look at humans and say, hey, we can do all of these things, you know, we can end this whole thing if we wanted to, right? Humans may look at that and say, hey, our ability to not end things is what makes us superior to you. You know what I'm saying? Like it all depends on like the perspective. So, and I only bring all this up because I think that's the larger point that the X-Men, the show overall, and maybe that the comic books as well, has been trying to preach is like, hey, like all of these, we all have these differences. You know, your difference doesn't make you more superior on this side. Like, hey, you have the ability to do X, Y, Z, but we have the ability to feel, right? To feel emotion, to respond, you know, to care about a common man, whatever, that you don't have. So like, ultimately, we're just trading superior qualities and such. Like, and it's meant to be ridiculous, because racism and any type of discrimination based on abilities or looks or such and such is illogical and stupid, right? And I think like it's so on the nose, especially when, you know, with the Shiara, that's overall the point that they're trying to make, like the point they're trying to drive home, really. So like, none of us are above the need to feel superior. Like, none of us, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can look at any, by gender, you can look at about ability. Like, I teach 16-year-olds who are insecure about their intelligence, their looks, all these different things. But man, the moment they find somebody else that they can hoard something over, they did it. Hey, one kid is despondent because she got a 19 on her ACT. But once she finds out that somebody got a 15, then, you know, king or queen of the world, you know. So the X-Men is, yes, the animated series, and yeah, there's some lightheartedness, but like, it's a really heavy show, and it's really heavy on like the social conflicts and like how stupid the shit is, right? And it's told through like this really extreme of like mutants and humans, but man, you can put that amongst any two different groups in any realm, and it's the same thing.
Yeah. Frank, quick question, Frank. In the comics, is there like a backstory of how she fell in love with Charles? Because it just seemed kind of like, oh, we fixed Charles and now we're in love and we're getting married. Was it just kind of like we're getting married out of necessity, or did they really love each other? And like, how did that come about?
That stemmed from the OG series. In season 3, the Phoenix Saga happened, where Jean Grey manifests the Phoenix Force. The Phoenix Force was in danger of destroying the whole universe, all of existence. So everybody, like the Shi'ar Empire, like that's how they crossed paths, was out of space. And the Shi'ar Empire, the previous leader, Deken, Leandra's brother, he wanted that power for himself. And Leandra was the princess at the time, and that's how Charles and Leandra met. So this, I wish the show kind of show how they met, talk a little bit backstory how they met. But yeah, their love, they've been in love with each other for years. But when the Phoenix Saga ended, he came back to Earth, and Leandra rose to the throne when Deken was chopped down. So that's more of the history between Charles and Leandra. It goes back.
Yeah.
Taylor Swift to write like the love story version of it. That way I can fully grasp it. Thank you.
Yeah, she's working on a triple album about the X-Men 97. Can't wait for that one. But you know, Frank, you mentioned about how, you know, the OG series talks about the Ken, and I mean, there's, like you said, there's a huge storyline that's where the Phoenix is involved. That's how Jean Grey gets the Phoenix. I did like how Leandra is talking to Charles. Charles is talking about how he wants to go visit. He just wants to visit Earth. He wants to see his X-Men. And she kind of is like, no. She's like, you know, families can cause drama. I don't want you to get caught up in any kind of drama. And he's like, didn't your brother nearly destroy the universe with the Imkron crystal? Like, I thought that was like a great like shot. Like, for those of us who watched it, like, it was like, I mean, yeah, like, you're worried about like love triangles, but like, your brother almost destroyed everything, you know, like, so calm down with your drama stuff.
Your sister is just as destructive.
Right. Like, exactly.
That's just control right there. It's like, no, I don't want you to go see your family, but you need to stay around mine because they're just toxic. Like, that's just, make it make sense. I don't know.
And speaking of control, we see that, or we hear that Charles is a little freaky. He's referred to as Lalandra's royal consort. And then he says, you know, your man just speaks as of me like I'm a pet. And he's like, not an entirely displeasing thought. She says, hush now, beloved, you may bark later. Marcy, you're laughing, but like, what'd you think about that? Yeah.
I was dead when he said that because I was like, wow, if this had occurred during the original series, like, I would have been a kid, and I, like, that totally would have gone over my head. I would have been like, right. Okay. But no, it was hilarious. Like, way to go, Charles. Like, you're not letting your disability get you down. Let your freak flag fly. We are here for it. No kink shaming here.
There we go. And, you know, speaking of the disability, he has an exoskeleton suit. So he was like Iron Man, or, you know, like Lex Luthor has a power suit in DC. Like it was Rhodey. Like Rhodey. Yeah, there you go. Like, that was kind of cool. Does he, and Frank, question for you, does Professor X, does he usually have an exoskeleton suit that he uses on Earth?
No, not on Earth. In this storyline, he does with the Shi'ar Empire, but on Earth, he does not. It visibly bothers me that the Shi'ar Empire has technology to restore his consciousness back to his body, but the motherfucker still can't walk. That's amazing to me. I don't understand that. You brought this man back to life, but he can't walk on his own still.
Don't you think him having his disability, like his powers, like his disability is part of who he is?
No, I get it. No, yeah. You're totally right. I'm talking about from the technological advancement
on their side
of this, of these people,
yeah,
from galaxies and galaxies away. They brought this man back to life, like literally back to life. Like nowhere on Earth could do that. And he's walking around an exoskeleton because they can't figure out stem cell research to make him walk again. It's almost like a plot hole. I don't know.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
I'm reading the private chat. I swear, I can't with y'all.
And I'm watching like the MVP.
Sending money to Israel, but Flint don't have clean water. Like, it's crazy.
God damn. Here we go.
Real shit.
Yeah. I mean, maybe also too, how the people feel towards Taryn. They're like, nah, like make him lesser than us and keep him at that level. He can't walk. We're not going to make him walk. He needs to stay at that level.
They can literally stop time. Leandra and Charles can literally stop time, and like,
but they don't like his face. So why are they going to help him even further? They don't like his Milky Way self. Like, what the hell?
Well, I also love how like they were like calling him out. Like, you should know about this. He's like, I read that the second day I was here. I love how like he's like firing on him. Like, I know about your culture. I got it. I read it the second day I was here. I'm good to go. I'm Professor X. And speaking of Professor, I think the most creative scene in this episode was when he takes the Shi'ar Empire, you know, those folks, and pulls them into the astral plane to educate them on coexistence. Tristan, as a teacher, did you appreciate this scene?
Oh man, the condescending nature of it. I love that. That might be my favorite scene of the entire episode. And they just were all so helpless, you know what I'm saying? Like, he was just putting them down at every moment. Like, that's literally my teaching style. So yeah, again, like, Charles Xavier might be, if I'm really thinking about it, he might be my favorite character in the X-Men. I don't know, maybe it's this like pseudo Martin Luther King vibe, you know, like, but yeah. Also like, well, Martin Luther King was also kind of a condescending professor as well. Like,
I'm going to say, well, yeah.
Martin Luther King is also like one of my favorite humans, like ever, you know what I'm saying? If not my favorite human ever. Like, so there's parallels there that I've always found interesting. If not because, like, there's this inherent flawed nature in like trying to bring people together, right? Like, because it ignores a lot of logical cynicism that you kind of need to like operate throughout this world. But like, I do appreciate like that stubborn nature of like, no, this can happen. Like, just seeing the best of other people. And I think that's why I love Charles Xavier so much. But like, he is committed to the cause of not just trying to force people together, but like trying to educate people about other people. And as an educator, somebody who like, whose life is education in a big sense, like, I appreciate that, you know what I'm saying? Even in an animated series, like, I appreciate seeing that. So that was probably my favorite scene throughout the entire episode. Mm-hmm.
I do love how like the astral plane is something that Professor X taps into. Obviously Black Panther taps into that. And obviously in the MCU, we see it with Scott and Jean Grey. I like how they have this place that they can only, you know, only a select few can go to communicate or to get their point across. So that's a cool thing about the show. And I thought that scene looked amazing. I thought that was like really like a standout for the first six episodes. Brittany, you're nodding. What'd you think about it?
Yeah, no, it was a really cool kind of diversion from the episode itself. I mean, we're already in space as it is. Let's just take it a step further. You know, let's just take away your abilities or your control. And now you've entered into my mind.
Yeah.
Also, if that were to ever have been Tristan's mind, I would be scared as fuck. Because he's going to hand my ass to me, and I'm gonna just have to accept it, just very much like Deathbird had to, right? You know, she tried to stand up and say something, and he's like, shut up. Boop. You know, I feel like that's how Tristan would be with me anyway.
Although my astral plane is just like a series of Caitlin Clark highlights, and
oh my here we go. Yeah, I mean, no, that scene was really cool. I just want to take a quick second, Justin, yep. Share something in the chat. We've had King B Johnson joining us today, as yep. well as Show Me Stacker. We appreciate both of y'all being here in the live chat. Show Me Stacker said something really funny to me, referring to Charles and Lalandra. It's like a really expensive surgery at the vet's office. And the vet just tells Lalandra, why don't you just get another one? Damn, that's dark. Kind of has a point though. Anyway, so that being said, astral pain. Yeah, that was really cool. And then the whole interruption of Gambit and that realization of what was happening to his X-Men while he's been away. And the very fact that Frank mentioned earlier, Magneto wasn't a part of it. It's just more cause obviously for Charles to get back to where he belongs. And that's on Earth. That's with his X-Men. You can't have X-Men without Charles Xavier, and you can't have Charles Xavier without Magneto. So,
I mean, the symbolism in the classroom of when he gets the psychic vision, and the, I don't know if y'all noticed the globe that's on the desk burns. It just bursts into flames, and then from there on, everybody in the classroom bursts into flames. I love the symbolism there because it's for me what that told me is that. While Charles is living his life, and he's with his love, the world is burning literally and figuratively back home, and he is the key of like reversing or fixing whatever issues is going on back home. I know we didn't talk much about this with Deathbird, but you know Deathbird is she's very like hesitant about. Her sister marrying a human, and she says something that is like, and it kind of goes back to what Tristan's talking about with the racism thing and this superiority complex and inferiority complex as well. She says to Leandra, for Charles to prove who he is, we need to wipe his memories away of everything he ever known. Mm-hmm. And it's so hypocritical for her to say that because the Shi'ar Empire, they pride themselves on their history. They pride themselves on their family line, their bloodline, what they've been through, who they are, where they've come from. And for her to say that to somebody who she sees less than, to say, if you really love her, then forget your past, where in reality, your past is, you know, who you are is tied to where you come from. So I thought that was very interesting as well when she said that.
Yeah, and the fact that that's a bridge too far for Charles. He, you know, he will not erase the memories of the X-Men. So that was kind of a cool way to show that he's going to get back in the game. Frank, before we move on to Storm's storyline, is there anything Easter egg wise or anything like Gladiator or the other characters out in space, the Shi'ar Empire that you want to talk about before we talk about Storm?
I do. I really do. in the opening scene when the Kree are being under attack by the Shi'ar Empire, and they pretty much wipe the floor with them. You see a guy in a blue and red suit. His eyes is lit up. His left eye is lit up. For those who don't know, that is Vulcan. That is Cyclops and Havoc's brother.
You've talked about him, yeah.
I have, yeah. I talked about him a few weeks ago. He's literally one of the more powerful beings on the planet, like in the universe, in all the multiverse. And for the writers and the creators to place him in that scene, and he doesn't say a word, have the comic book community like upside down. Like, this is like one of the most powerful beings, and he didn't say shit. And like, he's in the Imperial Guard with the Shi'ar Empire. And there's been comic books where like he overtook the Shi'ar Empire and became this leader and this all, so on and so forth. But to dive a little bit into the character, when Cyclops and Havoc are kids on the plane, where Cyclops and a father and mother are believed to be dead. Mm-hmm. The plane crashes. Cyclops and Havoc are given the only parachute, and we thought the plane crashed. We thought they died. Well, later on, I think in 2004 issue came out, the Vulcan series, where Cyclops' mother was pregnant, and they didn't know. And when the Shi'ar Empire confiscated him from that plane, they killed Cyclops' Corsair's wife and gutted the baby and took the baby out and pretty much put the baby in this ager where it aged him rapidly into what he is today as an adult. And when the Shi'ar, he finds out about what happened to his mother, and he goes mad, and he pretty much overtakes the Shi'ar Empire. But to see him in there, it tells me that we're gonna get more space, because you don't show somebody of that elk, of that level of power, for no reason. I think we'll see him very soon.
That's cool, because yeah, a few weeks ago you were really high on this character, and I guess I'm gonna have to go back and watch it, because I've watched the episode twice. I totally just did not notice the character. I guess he just like perfectly blended into the background or something. I didn't notice it, but I'll have to go back and check that out, because you're right, that's something they'll probably bring back in another episode as we're going forward.
And it's perfect timing, because Cyclops just lost his son. So if you bridge that gap of like, I lost a son, but I've gained a brother that I never knew about, it could be a perfect transition going to next season.
And what if the brother's into the clone also? You know, maybe so. I mean, the Goblin Queen was very hot, so I think everybody's at least a little interested, right?
Yeah,
let's just be real. Yeah. So moving on, let's get to Storm. Storm faces off with the adversary, which, Brittany, I want to get your thoughts on this. First off, did you notice, like, the adversary and Storm, they sounded very similar?
Very similar indeed, and I am not 100% sure if the same voice actress is okay.
Yeah.
All right, makes a lot more sense now. still creepy as hell, though. Like, you know, I think it's supposed to be like an owl type thing, especially when the adversary is like crawling up that cave tunnel thing as Storm is trying to retrieve this cactus that's supposed to have some magical healing properties to save Forge, who had been bitten by the adversary in the previous episode, and that infection is just spreading and it's oozing, and it's just not a good look for him, and he's probably gonna die. That adversary coming towards her and talking, the voice alone is crazy, the spinning of the head is crazy, and I mean, it made me cringe. It made me cringe the entire time. So Storm is also the voice of Adversary. That's very cool. That's very interesting. Because there's that one point Adversary is echoing something back to Storm when she had a conversation with Jean about wondering what it would be like to be human. And that's kind of like come back to haunt her and what have you. Interesting stuff, Justin.
Allison Seeley Smith, who is the voice of Storm. She's been the voice of Storm for 30 years. So she was Storm.
God bless. Also,
yeah. And that's been one of the really cool things about this series. Not only the fact that they brought back a lot of the voice actors, but the ones who like maybe kind of have aged out of sounding like their characters, they play other characters. So
yes.
The original voice of Jean Grey is now the voice of Dr. Cooper, the woman that Emma Frost attacked her dress in the previous episode. So I do think it's cool how they keep people that are in the family of the X-Men animated series.
In the last episode, I mentioned that the original Gambit voice is now the voice of Cable. So
Another good example of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Marcy, whenever we got the Forge and Storm storyline in the, what episode was that? It's episode 4, I believe. They were in Dallas. Now they're in Arizona. So this is a Southwestern couple, right? They're just all over the place. What did you think about those two characters and how this was kind of resolved? Or do you think it was resolved in a meaningful way?
It was hard to tell for me because last we saw them, Storm was just very angry at Forge, mm-hmm. right? But now she's in a position where she has to do whatever she can to save him, where she could have been angry enough to be like, you know what? Like, tough cookies. Like, you're going to die. I'm so sorry. But I don't know if it was because maybe she thought he could help her get her powers back, or just because Storm was not just going to let him die without at least trying to save him. So it was hard for me to tell. And then I don't know how they wrap things up. It was just kind of hazy for me, but
yeah,
I think the adversary really helped push Storm over the edge of I have to save him and I can't just kind of give in to this adversary. And then part of me also felt like the adversary was a lot of your inner critic that's kind of pushing you, right? Your inner critic is obviously putting you down, and that sucks when that happens, but your inner critic can sometimes also push you to face your fears, which is what Storm had to do basically. And I wasn't very clear if that is why she got her powers back, because she was able to face her fears and her inner demons. But as much as the adversary freaked me out, I kind of understood the necessity of having that, whether it was your inner critic voiced by an external, weird ass bird. It was just very powerful for me, her transformation to get her powers back, but then come back more resplendent than ever. Her hair was super beautiful and she had a new suit. So I liked the resolution of it, but it was just kind of hazy to me, where they were going with Forge, and is she not mad at him anymore, or was she just trying to save his life because she's not just going to let him die?
Well, she referred to him as her love, at one point when he was just kind of just don't worry about me. This is a lost cause. And she's no, she shared her affection, with him and whatnot. And therefore that was the motivation to go and locate this cactus that is supposed to heal him. Right. I think, and I'm going to turn this to Tristan in a sec. I think it's just conveying the whole message that, we are our own worst enemy, and we have, we're our own demon. And whether you're mutant or human, it doesn't matter. The struggle is real, regardless of what capabilities you may or may not have. I'm going to turn it over to Tristan. I'd like to get his thoughts on the adversary and Storm.
I have very little profound to say, but when I've watched that, the thing that I kept coming back to was the philosopher Glorilla. when she says, "Hey, stop overthinking. These hoes can't fuck with you." That's Storm. that's exactly what it is.
Wait a second. Where did Frank go?
I second everything that Marcy and you, Brittany, said. She's a goddess. I know enough about X-Men and Black Panther to know Storm is a goddess. So I always felt I don't say I always felt to me it made sense that the thing that would restore her powers quicker was her recognizing that she's a goddess, right? And I think that's a powerful message in itself. Damn, you're Storm. You know what I'm saying? So much of it is just recognizing your power and who you are and what you can do. Now, Justin said at the beginning, I did kind of think it would, take more for that to get her powers back, but I'm not a writer, but I do appreciate the message. But yeah, I just kept coming back to Glorilla. I'm singing that in my head, man. stop overthinking. These hoes can't fuck with you, man. Like, and that's it's really as simple as that. Like, once she realized that she was the thing that was holding her back, like, my favorite quote probably ever is, you know, Lupe Fiasco, my greatest enemy is my inner me. You know what I'm saying? So, like, the thing that was killing her, the thing that was keeping her from recognizing what she had to do to get her powers back was, like, recognize that she was the power. So I loved it. Like I said, she came back better than ever, and I'm excited to see how her fuck shit up, you know, going forward.
And
that's all I did.
For the record, sorry, Frank. For the record, that was profound as fuck. Go ahead.
Just like a humble ass motherfucker. I'm not gonna say anything profound and go on a fucking dissertation of what makes it so fucking powerful.
It's Glorilla. It's like
the fuck. I was gonna say, I hope people didn't lose sight of this episode from the standpoint that Forge healed her, like the executioner virus, the episode before. That was healed. That part was healed. Like
okay. This was all about okay. her. I thought that wasn't successful though.
Yeah, no, it was. Well, from the scientific part, it was. This was all a mental block for her. The adversary is a manifestation of her. It feeds off fear, and despair and all of that. So she was still, and I thought it was perfectly placed when she told Madeline Pryor, who thought it was Jean Grey at the time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I wonder what it feels like to be human, and I think her having those doubts and like wondering what the other side of the fence is like, that was a mental block that was holding her powers in check domain at that point was, I want to know what it feels like to be human. Then once she realized, man, I'm fucking Storm. I'm an Omega level goddess. Like, what the fuck am I worrying about being a human? Like, I'm me, you know what I'm saying? And that was the final block or the final stage of her realizing who she is and getting out of that that mental block of her powers being locked up. So,
wow, I did not understand that at all. Now it makes a lot more sense. Now it's like, now I think it was a really good episode because I didn't. Well, I mean, honestly, with Storm and her powers, I thought it was going to take some kind of weather event for her to get her powers back. And I don't mean that as a joke. I meant like literally, like I thought the thunder and lightning would have to strike her, like a la the Flash movie, which everyone should watch, by the way. Like I thought there was gonna be some kind of like weather event that would trigger her to, you know, again, unleash her inner self and, you know, she gets her powers back. But pretty good way to get there. I didn't pick up on it.
Frank, real quick. If Magneto were only there to tell her, have kind of angst, don't be afraid, she would have been healed. She would have been healed.
And in the episode and like the road to getting her powers back, everything she went through in her road, like people don't know Storm, she's claustrophobia. She's claustrophobic. Like she doesn't fuck with enclosed spaces. So
yeah,
to like put that as one of the final blocks to get, I mean, to save Forge's life, she had to crawl through a fucking tunnel, which is terrifying for her. And that's the juxtaposed like counteracting moment of her character is that she is literally a goddess, and like she has these basic fears that you would think, why would a goddess have these fears? But that's the level of writing I love that X-Men has, even with Charles Xavier and him being a paraplegic. You know, the power in their own ways, but at the same time they're flawed. Just because you're a mutant doesn't mean you're perfect. You have flaws just like any other human who doesn't have the X gene. And I love the how they made it. I mean, it was kind of an expedited process of getting her powers back, but I love how they show like these levels of like what she had to go through to get her powers back, of like, you know, going through these challenges that she's fearful of on a daily basis, like claustrophobia, things of that nature. So
yeah, now that she has the powers back, she's got kind of a classic look back, right, Frank? That's kind of she had the mohawk to begin this season, but now she's kind of going back to. And is this a look that she had in the OG series? I can't totally remember exactly.
No, not in the OG series. They showed an episode in the OG series in the future where she had the mohawk, but the final incarnation of that suit, that's from the old school Uncanny X-Men series, and I screamed like a 13-year-old girl when I saw that suit. I was like, these writers know their history. Yeah. I fuck with y'all.
It goes right with like when Wolverine has that like brown and like off yellow kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the short, like, yeah. I don't say horns, but like, yeah.
Pointy ears. That's like old school. You're right. That's like 80s X-Men, like going into the 90s kind of stuff. Yeah. Very cool. I enjoyed the new look, or the classic look. Frank, a question that I'll pose to you, because I'm not sure the rest of us might know this, but Brittany mentioned before about how we saw Forge use some like Doctor Strange type magic. He had like the ring going. It looked very much like Doctor Strange. Forge says he learned magic from his mother. Who is this? Do you know who his mother is? Do you think we're going to see this character in the series?
I know he's a Cheyenne Native American. That's where his people are from, but I don't know his mother. I don't know his mother per se. Like, okay. I know the family, they're the witch doctors in that Cheyenne tribe. Mm-hmm. And his mother was a witch doctor, but I don't know her. I don't know if she's going to play like a prominent role in this series or not. I doubt it.
Yeah. The symbol on the book, to me, appear to be more Native American culture as opposed to like whatever is taught at
Bleecker Street.
Sure, yeah, we'll go with Bleecker Street. That works. I couldn't think of the place at wherever they were in the Doctor Strange
movie. Camertage.
Thank you. Good Lord, that the struggle is real, y'all.
Look at me.
Look at you knowing your MCU stuff. I'm so proud. There we go. The book, the symbol on the book appear to be more like Southwestern, you know, like native to a Native American tribe. So, and I was just going to say, there's so much lore within Native American culture and histories that they have like their own magic that they can call upon. So to me, I think it would be more of a nod towards his heritage as opposed to like Doctor Strange kind of thing. But that's not to say that they can't like overlap to a degree. Like, it all maybe come from the same source. It's just how it's wielded is, and where it's coming from is what's different. We're all the same people.
Yeah. So to kind of wrap up this episode, you know, after what happened in episode 5, I think it's nice that the X-Men kind of got a shot in the arm of having Professor X come back, Storm get her powers back and come back. Just want to kind of go around the horn with everybody, starting with Tristan. How do you see these two characters now being reintegrated into the X-Men? Because Storm is one of the leaders and Professor X, you know, they're his X-Men. So like, how do you see that kind of playing out? There's only 4 episodes left this season. We know there's going to be a season 2, but what do you kind of forecast for the return of Professor X and Storm?
Wow. With Professor X, I'm more interested in like how he reintegrates himself back. Like what is the shock level as not just, you know, the X-Men, but just shit, the world comes to see that he's not dead. And like, what does that mean? What is the power dynamic between him and Magneto whenever Magneto reemerges? I think Storm's reintegration is going to be much more like seamless. Like, that's family. Like, she essentially took a hiatus. A boo vacation. So I think that'll be much more seamless. But I think with Charles, it's much more like the geopolitical aspect of it. Like, what does this mean now for mutant and human relations? What does this mean with he and his relationship between he and Eric? I'm as curious as anybody. I don't really have answers or even speculation. I'm just kind of here for the ride, to be honest.
Yeah. Marcy, same question. How do you see them rejoining the team? And like a little like a side question, you know, in the first couple episodes, Storm was very tight with who we thought was Jean Grey, but that turned out to be the clone.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen when she learns that was the clone and old Jean is back, or the original Jean is back?
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that. I think, and I love Tristan's answer. I think obviously Storm now getting her powers back, she's obviously going to go back and do whatever she can to help the X-Men. I don't know what that means for her to find out that was the clone. She might be conflicted, but I think she's done enough work in this episode to be like, okay, like I'm strong enough to not let that conflict me or, you know, feel some type of way about it or let that get in the way of what I need to accomplish to help the remaining mutants. So I think obviously she's just going to snap back. Charles, like Tristan said, I think it's going to be different. How does he reincorporate himself? How do mutants take that he's alive? They might be like, why did it take you so long to come back? What are humans going to think? But then also to kind of go along with the parallel of kind of MLK, like very nonviolence, let's all get together. Like we can all, you know, work together and we're all the same. How does that shift whenever all of your, most of your children, you know, have been killed? The mutants have been killed. Does that make him lean more into kind of like Malcolm X philosophy where it's like, no, like by any means necessary, like we do not have to like fuck with these people. Like they are causing real harm to us. Or does he lean more into like, no, we still have to like all get along and be caring and like kill them with kindness. So it'll be interesting to see what that does to him. Yeah,
no, good thoughts. Brittany, same question to you. What do you see happening with the return of Storm and Professor X?
Storm, I think, is going to just fall back in line. I think kind of echoing what everyone else has said. I mean, she was made co-leader with Cyclops for a reason. That woman can carry herself and the team just fine. You know, sometimes we all need a sabbatical away from our jobs, and it's kind of necessary. You need to come back renewed, refreshed, you know, what have you. She's coming back looking, feeling awesome. Yeah, so I think she's just going to be fine. I kind of feel, because of the progression of where we are in the season, I'm not going to say they're going to gloss over Charles' return and everyone's going to be like, oh my God, great, like you're back, you know, we really need you right now kind of situation. But I feel like it's not going to be that very in-depth, like, why were you gone for so long? We really needed you. How could you let this happen? You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't think it's going to like really pan out that way. But with the idea that Magneto is gone, I wonder if Charles is going to like change his ideals that he once, you know, held on to so strongly. And then kind of maybe shift to that perspective of Magneto, kind of like what Marcy was saying, having like that, oh no, they can't fuck with us anymore. We've got to, you know, do something about this. We got to hit hard. We got to get hit fast, you know.
Yeah.
I'm here and I'm like the most powerful mutant or one of the most powerful mutants to exist. Y'all are going to like wish you were ever been born kind of thing. It'd be interesting to see like if that were to happen. I highly doubt that's going to happen because it is Charles Xavier after all. I don't know. I like the little shakeup a little bit just because of, you know, the very fact that he was away for so long. Maybe he's got guilt. He doesn't know how to channel that guilt. He doesn't know what to do with it. And that's why he's just going to like fuck things up. And I don't know. It'd be interesting to see that happen.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Frank, let me give you the final word on this. Talking about the return of Storm and Xavier. I know you're a Cyclops guy. And we're kind of seeing Cyclops. Scott Summers he's not Breaking Bad per se, but he's teetering, right? Do you think Professor X's return after Professor X chose Magneto over Scott, his like favorite son, you think we're going to get some drama between Scott and Professor X?
I don't think so, from the standpoint that Charles chose Magnus for a reason. Charles felt like Magnus needed it to do a character turn.
Right.
Charles doesn't see Cyclops as being a leader saving Cyclops, but I think he saw Magnus being leader of the X-Men saving Magnus and what his life's work and his life's ideology has been towards Magnus, which he's denied pretty much since the day he left the X-Mansion. Because they co-founded the X-Men together. But I think Charles bet his life on it that Magnus will change his ways if I'm not here anymore. And he was right. I mean, you saw episode two, Magnus had a chance to let the whole UN down, literally, and he didn't do it because of Charles's promise, Charles's word, and Charles's faith in Magnus. So I think it wasn't because he had doubts in Cyclops' leadership. It was more so he wanted Magnus to see the light, whether Charles was there or not. And that's why I think Cyclops will understand that once. And if Charles has to explain it to him, I'm sure he will. I think Cycle will be just fine.
Understood. And we've been saying Magnus a lot last few minutes. That's one of his names. That's part of his, like, it's that Charles calls him that. So just heads up to Brittany. I know you're curious about that. So
my bad. Yeah, Eric.
Thanks for being discreet, Justin, you jerk.
Well, for those listening and watching who may have not heard that, but he's been called Magnus in this series, a couple episodes before. I guess
that's more pillow talk name than common knowledge.
Okay, fine.
Well, Charles called him Magnus in this episode too, and he's like, I don't want to forget because I have a good friend, Magnus, that I definitely would not want to forget. So that's interesting if that's a pillow talk name. Quick question, Frank. Does Charles know about Magneto and Rogue?
He doesn't. One thing about Charles, with their very confusing relationship that he has with Eric, Magnus, Magneto, Lesher, Master of Magnetism, is that as powerful as Charles is, he never pierces Magneto's mind. Even when Magneto has his helmet off, he doesn't want to read his mind. Mm-hmm. There's a level of respect there of like staying out of his head. So whatever that Magnus had going on Rogue back in the day, he doesn't know about it. No, well, in the comic books, he didn't know about it until later on, but he might know about it in the show version, who knows. But he kept a very safe distance from reading Eric's mind, unless, like, you know, Eric was attacking the X-Men and the world depended on him, like, you know, using him as a puppet to get away from danger. But other than that, he never pierced his mind, so he didn't know about Rogue and Magnus in that fashion.
Well, I'm guessing he'll find out about it probably pretty soon. Frank, before we close it out, is there anything else you want to talk about with from this episode that we didn't get to?
I think we touched on a lot of the major points. I mean, I think these next three episodes are going to be monumental, and I think a couple of villains are going to showcase. I think the big bad villains are going to showcase. I think the show's done a good job of making it seem like Sinister and I could be wrong. It could be just Sinister. I don't know, but I feel like these next three episodes are going to showcase a whole new villain. I'm pretty pleased with it so far, and I think we touched on everything that we need to touch on.
Very cool. Okay, so let's move on to the next item. Deadpool and Wolverine, the official trailer dropped yesterday. Did everybody get a chance to watch it? No?
Yes. Marcy?
Oh, yes.
Tristan, did you watch it?
I saw like half of it. Okay. They were at the bar, and I didn't see the whole thing. It was on Twitter, but yeah, so most of it.
Well, okay, yep. Let's start off. So, Brittany, I'll go to you first. What'd you think about the trailer?
Let's fucking go, man. Like, go. It's so good. I cannot wait to see Ryan Reynolds, Hugh Jackman on screen together with as their characters and just like fucking shit up. Let's fucking go. That's all I have to say. Let's fucking go.
Yeah. Frank, what are your thoughts on the trailer?
We talked about this, Justin, at work today, man. I'm fearful, bro, because the trailer was perfect, and if the movie is anything less than great, I'm gonna be so fucking pissed. Because everything that trailer had, everything that I wanted. It was funny, the action, the odd couple vibe between Wolverine and Deadpool. You know, the villain, everything was perfect. If it's anything less than what I saw from the trailer, I'm gonna be so highly fucking pissed.
There's no way this movie's bad. This is going to be incredible. This is going to be the biggest movie of the year. Easily the biggest movie of the summer. It comes out July 26th. I can't wait. I thought this trailer looked phenomenal. Like, just the fact that we're getting you know, Hugh Jackman and Ryan Reynolds together in a movie finally. I mean, they were in a, obviously they were in a movie called X-Men Origins Wolverine, but that was a different version of Deadpool. That was the Merc with the mouth, but without a mouth, which makes no sense, but that's what they decided to do. Fox, 20th Century Fox. The music for the trailer was perfect. The comedy is like on point Deadpool stuff. You know, the skit about cocaine, about how Kevin Feige, that's the one thing Feige said that was off limits. Don't know cocaine. And they're giving all these like slang terms for it. Like white girl interrupted and Forrest Bump. And, you know, like, I love that stuff. I love the fact that we see a new villain, which very much is right up the alley of Professor X, but it's not Professor X. It's a character named Cassandra Nova. And who is Cassandra Nova, Frank?
In a nutshell, Cassandra Nova is Professor X's evil twin sister. When Professor X was in the belly of his mama, there was another embryo developing, and he killed her. Well, we thought he killed her in the womb, but she survived, and she pretty much she has the same powers as Charles X, like telekinesis, telepathy. She was able to manifest a body from Charles and create her own body. That's why she looks like Charles in the previews. She pretty much created a carbon copy of Charles's body, and she is all about destruction of the universe and controlling what's left over. So I'm pretty excited. It's a newer character too. Like, Professor X's origin story has been changed so many times. She debuted in 04. So it's a very new character as far as like the comic book community is concerned. So I know a little bit about her from like the Deadpool series that I read in college, but they can go so many directions with this character. I thought this character was going to debut in the X-Men 97 series because she played a big role in some stuff that happened in the series. So yeah, I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, and speaking of new characters, we also see Paradox, which, Marcy, I know you didn't get to see the trailer. You haven't watched it yet. But our guy Tom Wamscam from Succession, Matthew McFadden, is playing this character. Yeah, so you've got to check that out. He's a TVA agent, a la what we saw in the Loki series, the Time Variance Authority, for people out there that don't know what the TVA means. It looks like he is tasked, Deadpool, with finding a Wolverine who is down on his luck, who apparently let his universe die, or let all his family die. And we see this Logan come into grips, and he's down on his luck, and he's at the bar, and Wolverine or Deadpool recruits him. And it's just like, this looks so good. I mean, this is like, incredible dialogue. We see, while Deadpool's recruiting him, he's like, my universe is on the line. And he's like, you know how to do this. You were an X-Men. You were the X-Men, talking about Wolverine, which, you know, he's the most popular character, the X-Men by far, one of the most popular characters in comics. So really strong dialogue, great jokes. Tristan, I know you saw like half of it. What stood out to you from what you saw?
Tom Wamsgan, whatever the fuck. Yeah. from the little I saw, I'm just interested in like the conflict and like how, I'm not the biggest Deadpool fan. I think I've said that, but like, I'm excited about this movie because I've always like messed with Wolverine. So I'm just excited. I don't really have any insight. Sorry.
No, that's okay. That's okay. There's quite a few Easter eggs that I noticed, and Brittany and Frank, I want to get y'all's thoughts on these. Did y'all notice the giant Ant-Man / giant man head? Did y'all notice how when it opened, there were teeth there? So we're led to believe that an Ant-Man, maybe one that died at the hands of Kang in Quantumania, is the corpse that these characters are now making their headquarters.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. Go back and check that out. There's a giant Ant-Man. Like, it's giant man, because, you know, obviously Ant-Man can do that. Pretty cool stuff. We also see what I think is Red Skull's car from Captain America: The First Avenger in the void, which the void is like this wasteland that the TVA casts stuff in the void when they don't fit into certain branches anymore. Brittany, was there anything else you noticed that you wanted to highlight?
Oh, from the jump was the 20th Century Fox logo.
Logo, you know,
the whole logo, the 3D version of it is, you know, buried in the sand. It's kind of like a nod, like a fuck you to, to that, which I think is hilarious. Yeah, because I'm, as y'all were talking, I'm like rewatching it and trying to find, you know, frame by frame, you know, these things. And, you know, we get some familiar faces, of course. We got Negasonic, teenage Warhead. What's her name?
Frank, go for it. Oh, you don't know? It's
Negasonic Teenage Warhead, I think.
Warhead, yeah. Okay. And then
Yukio, her girlfriend.
Yukio, yeah. Her girlfriend, you know, lovely. Love that. But obviously the iconic yellow and blue Wolverine suit, you know, which plays very well into obviously us covering the X-Men 97 series.
Yep.
It's that's just bringing it home for me. Of course, I always love looking at Hugh Jackman. I also love the knowledge that the one reason he made a cameo in X-Men First Class was so he could say fuck off to a young Charles Xavier and a young Eric Lyncher, which, you know, so for him to be able to freely say fuck you or fuck this, you know, just the word fuck in general, I'm just thrilled. It just makes me thrilled. And I'm hoping, much to what Frank was saying earlier about the trailer, if we get anything less than what we've seen in the trailer, I will equally be very upset with the movie. I don't think that's going to happen, though. In Ryan Reynolds, we trust, with the exception of having no coke, thanks to Kevin Feige. But, you know, it is what it is.
No coke, but plenty of fucks, because they say fuck about 10 times in this trailer. And it's not a Red Band trailer. It's like the official trailer for a movie produced by the Walt Disney Company. So
gotta
love
that.
This is dawn of a new day. I mean, we read reports that Feige and Disney was going to let the Deadpool brand keep their tone, but to see it in a trailer and see that Disney is a producer of this film, it's dawn of a new day. Like, you about hear the F word about 30 times probably in the first hour of this movie, and to see that Disney is tied to this, bro, like, I Walt Disney is turning his racist ass is turning in his grave, and I fucking love it.
Well, if he's turning over in this movie, he's probably getting pegged, because that's probably that was mentioned in the first trailer. That was the teaser trailer during the Super Bowl. So, like, they held that back in this version. But another Easter egg, did y'all see Dogpool, the little dog dressed like Deadpool licking his face?
Yes.
Yeah.
The little puppy.
We're probably going to get Taylor Swift as Lady Deadpool. That's just kind of a rumor, but it seems like, or she might be Dazzler, because I have not listened to her new album, but apparently the last word on her new album is dazzling or dazzler. So just putting that out there, like, people are saying that that's her saying that she's going to be Dazzler in the movie.
Oh, Justin, I'm kind of like, I don't know what the term is, but I'm kind of frame by frame going through the trailer scrubbing. I just saw what you talked about, the giant Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Head, and it's opening up, and yes, there's giant teeth. That's how the villain comes out and kind of like makes the intro. Okay, that's crazy. Also, at first glance, I thought it was the Supreme what is that title in Doctor Strange? God, I'm so bad about Doctor Strange.
Sorcerer Supreme.
I kind of got that vibe, because you know, it's female, bald, kind of had like the same sort of look. I was just like, what universe are we in right now? You know? Where the Sorcerer Supreme is evil like that. But to learn that it's basically the evil twin of Charles Xavier. Interesting. I'm kind of surprised that the Shi'ar Empire didn't like try to make her, you know, come alive and keep, you know, Charles Xavier down on his luck, but you know, whatever.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And we also see Eliath, the purple smoke/storm monster that from Loki is also in this, which of course that character was fantastic. A big part of the void in the series. So Will I be surprised if Tom Hiddleston's in this movie? No, I will not be surprised. I think we're going to see a lot of the 20th Century Fox X-Men actors come back. I mean, the rumor for years was the fact that, like, in this movie, Deadpool was going to kill those characters and kill them off. Now it looks like he's going to try to save them, and he's recruited a Wolverine, not Logan from the Logan movie, because we know in that movie, spoiler, Logan dies. He finds a variant of Logan, a la Wolverine, who he recruits to join this journey. And I love how the trailer ends, where they jump through. They say, "Let's fucking go." They both say it, and they jump through a Doctor Strange like portal. So I don't know. And if you look at that scene, there's probably stuff that they took out, because it's like it's kind of a blank canvas. It's like there's other stuff.
They probably took out like a skyline. They probably took out, you know, just anything that may hint towards coming to 616 or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're probably jumping into the 616.
And, you know, the action is bloody and brutal. We see, you know, Wolverine stabbing Deadpool, you know, they're shooting Wolverine.
They're stabbing each other.
Yeah, they're stabbing each other. Then we see them fighting in the woods. And that woods scene is very similar to the opening scene of Avengers Ultron. So don't be surprised if we see some of that stuff brought back also. So I'm super excited about this movie. I can't wait. I've watched the trailer like 10 times. Like, I'll probably watch it 10 more times. Like, it's, and then like you have Madonna's Like a Prayer playing, which like continues the Deadpool tradition of like an 80s, like cheesy pop song. You know, like we had Cher, Turn Back Time in the last movie, a Pat Benatar song from the first Deadpool. I can't wait.
Agreed. But
we want to know what you're thinking about it. And well, first off, does anybody have any like final thoughts about the trailer, that something you didn't get a chance to say, because I did a lot of talking, but go around the room. Anybody, like Tristan, is there any final thoughts you want to say about the movie, or if you're looking forward to it or anything like that?
Looking forward to it. That Taylor Swift album is mid as fuck. Let's just, I'm gonna throw that out there for the film.
Hey, listen, I'm not a Swiftie. Not a Swiftie.
Marcy, anything you want to say about Deadpool? Have you seen the other Deadpool movies? Are you looking forward to this one?
Yes, I have seen the other. I've seen the first one. Might watch it because of Tom Wim scans and, you know, your whole no cook but plenty of fucks. That's going to be my new life motto. So may end up watching Deadpool.
Yeah, I think you should. Brittany, anything else you want to mention about that trailer?
Let's fucking go. That's it. That's my motto. Let's fucking go.
Frank, final word. Deadpool and Wolverine, July 26th.
I'm gonna give me some uninterrupted white girl and have a blast. I'm joking.
No, it's white girl interrupted. That's what
white girl interrupted. Yeah.
That was the other. Never mind. Moving on.
I love that Blind Al made the transition to the MCU. That's the character I've always wanted to see. Like, I want to see, you know, Blind Al and Bruce Banner hang out. You know, like, why not? Maybe that'll happen in the future. But now this looks so good. This looks so good. And I don't think the movie's actually done. I think they're still working on it because, you know, all the strikes and stuff. So, but what we've seen so far from the two trailers they've released has been, and the two trailers also, final thing I'll say, they're both very different. You know, there wasn't a lot of repackaged footage shown in the two trailers. So it's all, and the first one was great. This one was even better. So I'm sure we'll get one more trailer before the movie comes out late July, but I don't need it. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'd go see it tomorrow if I could.
As long as they don't do what most movie trailers are doing these days, and that's revealing the best parts of the movie in the trailer. As long as they don't do that, we're solid. I've got no qualms with anything.
I think this movie's going to have so much stuff that you couldn't reveal it all in the trailer. I think that's like, whereas the Marvels, you could have given the thing away in the trailer and that would have saved a lot of people like myself time and money. But Deadpool and Wolverine, you can't do that.
I have a question. One last question. And then we got to head out.
Yep.
Is everyone that's going to go see it getting the Deadpool designed popcorn box, popcorn bucket, whatever it may be?
I'm gonna get it.
You're gonna get it. Yeah. Even if it's got the Dune kind of like the sandworm and the anyway.
Especially if it has the Dune sandworm, yeah.
Very appropriate.
Yeah.
Oh Lord.
So anyway, that's now you know what we think about X-Men 97 and the Deadpool and Wolverine trailer. We want to know what you think about it. And Brittany, how can people tell us what they think?
Hey, we always encourage everyone to join us here in the live chat, just like King B. Johnson did. And our new follower here, Show Me Stacker. We also had a brief hello from Christian and McDorks. Appreciate y'all being here. But yeah, once again, join us on the live streams. And don't forget to subscribe. We're actually very close to 300 subscribers, y'all. We're at 296 at time of recording. So that is awesome. Thank y'all so much for the love and support. We're now entering season 6 of The Watchers in the Basement. That's right. We've been doing this for going into our 6th year. So subscribe, like this video or like this live stream if you've enjoyed it. And also hit that notification bell. That way you know the next time we will go live, which will be tomorrow, actually. We'll be talking about Justin.
The 5-year anniversary of a little movie called Avengers Endgame. We're going to hit you with our top 5 moments from what I think is the greatest superhero movie of all time. Maybe the greatest movie of all time.
Ooh.
Go back and watch that movie. A lot of great scenes in that movie. So please join us. Yep.
Yeah. So join us tomorrow for that Endgame live stream as we're talking about our favorite moments from that movie. I would love to hear what y'all have to say in the live chat. So again, subscribe, join us in the live chat. Also, follow us on social media. That's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Threads, all at Watchers Basement. Use that same hashtag to help grow our audience. Send us memes, send us articles, send us things that you like for us to check out, and we'll add it to the ongoing list. And lastly, we have audio podcasts available to you on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Be sure to give us a follow over there and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you, Brittany. I appreciate it. So for Brittany, for Tristan, for Marcy, and for Frank, I'm Justin saying thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Have a good night. Bye-bye.